with Jane Engler in this phone call from earlier this morning.
If they wish to continue those positions, they have to continue, you know, creating that position, so to speak. They both have, in essence, negotiated in bad faith, in my view. They both have, in essence, lied to the homeless people in terms of the campground by saying that it would stay open until January 1st, actually, with a 10-day warning to be given, and possibly even later if the permits for community house were not yet resolved. And the only change would be if there was the number of three or a few days of rain was bandied around, in which case there would be a renegotiation and rediscussion of the issue with campers. There was no renegotiation after a day and a half of rain. They moved in. Marceau announced he was closing down the property with Scott Kennedy standing right behind him. Daryl Darling has been out of town for 10 days or so, I know, at least for a week. Can't be reached. And so I use the term poverty pimps because I am angry with these men. I feel that they are using their positions improperly. It's not really, I guess I'm not really attacking their poverty pimping, but the decisions that they're making. But I believe that they're showing that they're not really interested in the welfare of these people through the decisions they're making, but rather in fulfilling the bureaucratic priorities that they have previously had. But you use the term poverty pimps yourself. Would you be using it differently? Would you use that term to refer to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless or any of the people on it?
I think so. In fact, I would even go so far as to say that the whole homeless movement has been kept going. The fact that it even started up after the activism came on was because the bureaucracy realized that there was a whole pot of money. And, you know, I've had problems with this from day one. Starting with the William James people, there was lots of questions asked about what happened to the money that they raised on the mall during the first...
The William James Association was actually run by Paul Lee and Paige Smith.
Right.
In essence, it was kind of the same group as the Citizens Committee under a different label, right?
Right. One of their main fundraisers, her first name was Nancy, and I'm not sure I forget now what her last name was, but she even raised questions about it on the radio station up at UCSC about what happened to all the money that they had raised, that William James had raised for the supposedly shelter, because...
We're talking in 1985 when you were on a hunger strike. They hit the streets with tin cans asking for money and raised quite a bundle, apparently. How much did they raise?
I really don't know, Robert, but according to Nancy, like I said, who was one of the primetime fundraisers, it was a considerable amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Now that, you know, was kind of the beginning of it all. Since then, you know, there's been all kinds of funds have come into town. First to buy the shelter, which was, I think, used with CDBG funds. Now we subsequently heard that they got $350,000 from the Red Cross to buy that back section, which I just do not believe that at all. If that's true, then the Red Cross should be, you know, severely investigated for misappropriating funds.
And you think that's too much money to spend?
Oh, ungodly, too much. And that's why I think that there's something wrong with that report, because that's kind of what I thought they was paid for the day center building, which was a whole different project. And that didn't include that ground.
We're talking about the property on which the open-air shelter center stands, the $350,000,
right,
for that,
right,
which was, I guess, purchased by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless in 1991, if we're to believe what... I did talk to Don Lane, who was mayor at that time, and I talked to Catherine Byers on the city council, who was mayor until recently. And, of course, that's what Paul Fotenhauer of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless claims. But as I pointed out earlier in this call, I don't have clear, specific understanding of that.
Yeah, because the original deal, which was supposedly written up by Fred Gray, contract, was that the Citizens Committee had 1 year to build community house, and then they got the property for $1, and they had a year to build community house, and at the end of that year, the property reverted back to the city of Santa Cruz. Now, you know, and so that was where it stood. And now also Fred Gray had told me at the time that he had written the contract in such a way as they would never get the property back. So
they being the city.
Right. So it doesn't make sense that the city, that $350,000 changed hands. I mean, that in itself is a tremendous scam.
Why would you call that a scam, Jen?
Well, because, first of all, that property is not worth $350,000. I don't even think that's less than an acre of ground, isn't it?
It's a half to quarter acre.
Right. And so that, and then this whole thing of, you know, well, it was initially just a paper transfer anyway. And, you know, I was still pretty tuned into things then, and there was never anything public. If that's what really happened at that point. So, I don't know, I just think there's a lot of questions.
Poverty pimp, the term poverty pimp, who else would you use, who would you consider in this community to be covered by that term?
Well, I think the Homeless Health Project. I mean, that was an unbelievable farce. I mean, they hired, these nurses and everything, and then you remember the great difficulty we had? We used to have to take the people to the hospital ourselves. They couldn't, we didn't have, and then the next thing you know, they bought a building, and you couldn't get, a homeless person couldn't get in that building. I don't know what the status is of that now, but I mean, here's another example of just money going for salaries and services, and they never get down to the homeless people. Another thing is the shelter project. I'm not quite sure what, I mean, there was a shelter project supposedly when I started working with the homeless back in 85, and if you had the dime, I think phone calls were a dime then, or maybe they still are, but anyway, if you called that number, you'd either get a busy signal or you would get a recording that they would call you back to, so that, you know, if you needed a bed.
Well, who headed that project?
I think it was Paul Brindell in those days. I think he still heads that project. And, I mean, you know, and all sorts of monies have gone into the shelter project. And when activist Linda Edwards was dying of cancer, he couldn't even find enough money to get a room for her. I mean, I just, that just does not make sense to me at all. He has administered, you know, millions of dollars and pulls down a very, very good salary.
How much does Paul Brindell get a year?
I have no idea, but I've heard that it's you know, considerable. And, I've often wondered, what do they do?
Paul Brindell, I believe, is currently involved in a project. He works for the Community Action Board. I think he still heads the shelter project. And he has also been something of a videographer the last few years. Paul and I have had a somewhat rocky relationship. He had me arrested in 1988 on the very property that is at question in these current shelter wars, where it was actually on the River Street shelter side of the property. That whole property used to be one piece of property with no fence between it and the free meal open-air shelter. The entire property was one piece. Campers camped there in 1988, seeking a legal place to sleep then as now. And Paul Brindell, the head of the River Street Shelter Project, had us all arrested and taken away. And he later, in the 6 months later, he refused to open the armory. We sat in his office demanding he do that. So he was on the other side. But then in 1990, Paul Brindell expressed great anxiety and concern that we were having a 4th of July rally. He refused to allow us to use his HandsNet computer to organize the statewide rally here in Santa Cruz, even though he had himself had been representing himself as a homeless activist, you might say, administering lots of money, head of the shelter project. And he did his thing with his computer, so Jane was always ragging him for that, I remember. Paul's a very personable guy, generally, we ended up on opposite sides. He was very suspicious of our rally. He formed a monitor group in which he'd got people like Sherry Connable and the Quakers to kind of act as a third force, because he was concerned that there was a right-wing group in town called Take Back Our Town, also known as the Red Shirts, who are anti-homeless, who were going to disrupt our rally and cause trouble. And indeed, they had a rally on the same day. They also applied for a permit the same day. And There's some controversy around Sherry Conable on that whole thing, which I probably have gone into in the past and may go into again in the future. Right now, however, Sherry Conable is putting out some excellent press releases for the campground, and I do not want to detract from her effectiveness in that. And as long as she keeps her meetings open, okay, Sherry, let's keep those meetings open with everybody invited. Sherry has a tendency to want to nudge me out of certain meetings, which she's got to resist that tendency, Sherry. Not a good idea. Otherwise, she's a very eloquent person, and she's very well spoken, and I'll detail her sins as I have in the past and at another time. We're talking Paul Brindell here. Paul Brindell Paul Brindell was the reason Sherry Conable, she claimed, had me excluded from her meetings in the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep in the summer of 1990, because he would not have me in the same room with him, or he would not allow me to work in the same room with him, he would not be in the same project as I was, because he claimed that I had slandered him in the Street Shit Sheet. The Street Shit Sheet, for all you novices, is a homeless newsletter that I occasionally put out, which is, kind of details ongoing events, demonstrations, police abuse, and so forth. I think Paul was mistaken. I think Paul has a thin skin. I think Paul whines too much. But, we all have our own sensitivity levels and hypersensitivity levels. And in the ensuing years, Paul and I kind of broke bread together and buried the hatchet. He did some excellent camera work around the Union of the Homeless, which was a group that formed in 1992. We occupied Reverend Josephine Caltran property across from the Stapleton's Market, and that area is still used every Saturday and Sunday by Food Not Bombs, and is even being considered by people at the SOS, Save Our Shelter, and Huff as an alternate site for a campground if we're driven out of the open-air shelter area on Sunday or Monday. And Paul was doing excellent camera work around that. He did a film on that, which was aired over cable television and is still being aired, by the way. It comes on every so often. He also did a film on the 1994 sit-down demonstrations that I thought was a very good film. He was on the scene with an important video camera, but I think that film served many purposes. That is to say, Paul is an expert at getting grants of money. Money, money, money. Paul's always been good at that, and I suspect that he wasn't simply being Good Samaritan in making these films. He also had his own agenda, funding himself and funding projects that he felt were worthwhile. And you can't really challenge someone for making a living. And on the other hand, Jane Immler, in this call we're hearing, and we're going to hear some more of it, is quite severe in her attack on poverty pimps. Because poverty pimps generate jobs supposedly with money being sent to homeless people, and they eat it up themselves. And the services they provide in no way resemble the amounts of money that they get. And then the problem, it becomes, the general public becomes hostile because they say, well, all these homeless people are still around here, and they're still spare changing us, and they're still hanging out outside the stores, and they're still, ragging around. Robert Morris is still ranting about the homeless and all this, and we give them all this money, and Paul Brindell is spending millions of dollars. Well, where is it going? Why isn't it having an effect? And the answer is, it's not Paul Brindell's fault. I'm not going to say that. It's, the poverty pimps certainly play a part in taking a piece of the pie, but the whole structure is set up so that people can do just that. The homeless people are not supposed to get the money, really. They're the pretext for the money to be distributed. The money goes to the people who are able to step into the middlemen, as usual, and the middlewomen get the money. It's interesting. I have a personal motivation here. I've got to confess it. I don't think I'd be ragging on Paul, whom I call Panda Bear Paul, by the way, which I regard as kind of a friendly title. He's a roly-poly kind of guy. Looks a little similar to me in terms of girth. We're both fat guys, that's how it is. And, he's been upset when I've called him that. He feels that somehow maybe it detracts from his dignity, or I don't know what it is. But for a period of time, he refused to talk to me because I called him Panda Bear Paul, okay? Which I thought was really ridiculous, because he'd gotten much more mellow in recent years. He'd actually written a letter on my behalf when I was convicted of serving free food in San Francisco. He wrote a letter to the district attorney, to the judge, actually saying that he thought that I should not be jailed, that I was an activist who was a value to the community. I've met Paul's family. I like Paul as a human being, but he acts like a complete idiot at times on some of these issues. And again, it's hard for me to to gainsay those who criticize people in positions of poverty pimpery. I mean, there's no question about that, that that's something else. Well, most recently, Paul has decided I'm not a trustworthy person and has sort of severed relations with me, and I've gotten a little annoyed because he's, in his most recent film, an excellent film called Campground, which some of you may have a chance to see, he has cut me out completely, even though I was one of the people who was speaking in the circle where he'd had speeches from everyone else. Before we continue digressing on Paul, though, we'll have a further digression in this incoming phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, not much of a further digression, but an interjection brief.
And this is Linda LeMaster again.
Thanks. I think that an important thought, getting back to the subject of poverty pimps, at least from my perspective, but I would urge people to try it on here, is some people who claim they want to help people who become homeless accept or believe in self-empowerment, including for homeless people. And others feel that they want to tell homeless people how to live, that they can do it better for someone else. And I think if we think about, you know, the difference between empowerment and deliberate disempowerment, then we can see how the money floods to the sides of, you know, the shuttle bus lockstep disempowerment model.
Mm-hmm.
That was my whole thought.
Well, you've been around here for two decades, Linda. You know, in fact, you introduced me, well, I don't know who introduced who, but we both got involved with the Scotts Creek people back in 1977. Those are the people who were arrested en masse for camping up the coast and then occupied the council, the city council, the board of supervisors' basement, the basement of the county building, I should say, in the, around winter, Christmas time, 1977, and were tried in the longest misdemeanor trial in Santa Cruz history and won. Amazingly.
Well, we didn't lose. We did not lose in court.
Definitely not. And so you've been around a long time. You've been on the forefront of fighting for civil rights for poor people, and in fact, you've even worked for Paul Brindell at different times, and of course, this may be a somewhat touchy question to ask you, and you can, of course, stand on the Fifth Amendment, but you've heard me and you've heard Jane criticizing Paul as engaging in poverty pimpery at different times, and, you know, I've got a sensitive ego, too, and I tend to, some of my arguments may come out of personal slights that Paul has done recently toward me, but is there any objective basis to a critique of Paul or others in the administrative bureaucracy regarding the question of poverty pimpery?
I'll try to be brief here.
My
opinions are never objective, and I don't pretend that there's such a state to start with. I think you and Paul are both a little touchy personally, and sometimes I personally wish that you could do that on your own time.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from dealing with men with easily bruisable egos, I think that I've had my arguments with Paul, too, and as you say, I also work with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that any time a program says that it's going to help homeless or other poor people that has a significant amount of money, and I don't think less than $12,000 a year is significant, by the way. I mean, that's just pocket money if you're doing anything on the community scale, but if you're getting more money than that, and he gets more than that just for himself, just for his salary, then if you spend more of it on your administration than you do on the service you provide, then you definitely qualify, in my view, as some kind of pimp.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it could be debated forever whether you're ripping off the federal government, the taxpayers, or the intended recipients.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you're doing all three. So I think we need to look at, you know, the only nonprofit that's organized and has its books in order for state franchise tax board inspectors that I know of that doesn't have a high administrative overhead is the Salvation Army. And they have other internal problems like discriminated against gay people,
mm-hmm.
from my point of view. So it's hard not to become a poverty pimp if you want your area or your community to get its fair share of the money taxpayers are putting into solving the problem of homelessness. But right now, after a decade or so, we have a more serious problem. Those monies are being withdrawn federally, and nothing else is coming in to take their place. People like Barbara are trying to articulate that if we played the game right, we could get the money here, and we could let the people who are affected by how it's spent have a say in how it's spent. That second part wouldn't be so hard to do, but getting money from federal coffers into our community is going to be hard to do from now on. So I think we need to really try to overcome these distinctions as best we can and unify before there's nothing whatsoever with which to build a roof or put in potable water.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really angry about these stupid words about jerking the porta potties around. Why the hell are they still porta potties? You know, when this city and this county know from their own conservative head counts how many people are homeless, it's inane and insane and cruel not to do anything other than so-called emergency measures. And then, now they're not going to do any of that. This is a fad nationally, by the way. It's not just your friend Paul Marceau, but it's nationwide. Now, because they see they can't do anything about this emergency by treating it like an emergency, all the money for emergencies is withdrawn. And people from the county welfare department to citizens committee board members are trying to figure out how to salvage these entities they create, these mm-hmm. nonprofit corporations. And the same way homeless people are trying to make a bedroll do what you need a tent to do. You know, it's the same dilemma the way I see it. So, you know, I'm willing to work for people who I might in some moods think of as a pimp if I feel like I'm liberating the resources that they seem to be sitting on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm reluctant to do any name-calling without some budget figures in front of me.
Well, get those budget figures.
Well, I think we're all working on that. But the point here is we need to pull the community together. We need merchants and people who see themselves as private property owners to start understanding what the people that they're scraping off their feet are going through and realize they're human beings of the same species and forget about the butt-buggering system of money dribbles. No.
That's a nice phrase, Linda.
So, you know, Paul Bendel probably won't have a job a year from now. None of these nonprofits who exist because of the civil rights movement are going to have federal money. If that's half of their budget, they're not going to exist as we know them.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, at least he's got half a year, right?
I don't know.
Some people have about half a week. That's the story right now.
By the way, I appreciate listening to you on the radio. Acknowledge his good media and communications work.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I agree that that's also a very different thing than advocating for homeless people, mm-hmm. let alone being an activist on their behalf and taking real risks.
Well, Paul has recently been, getting phone services for the poor, or at least that's...
Oh, yeah, let me have a chance to plug this. Through money that has no strings to the government, there is a resource available. If you're currently homeless and you need phone service, Paul's program, the Shelter Project, can make that available to you in 4 months at a time increments. And if you have more questions about it, you can call me. In fact, I'll be happy even to help you initiate the paperwork. But eventually you have to be capable of going into the Shelter Project for a brief appointment to get your little booklet of instructions and learn how it works and
mm-hmm.
show them your ID. So let me put my phone number out again.
Do it again. So this is for those who want to get phone service, right?
Yeah, free phone service if you're homeless.
Hey, free phone service if you're homeless. Listen, everybody out there, this is how you get free phone service. Go ahead.
Call me. This is a message line at 457-9754.
457-9754.
Box 182.
Box 182.
Or call the emergency hotline at the Shelter Project and insist on an appointment as soon as possible, because this number also does other things, but they can get you your free phone.
Well, let's work on that first number to begin with.
Okay.
And I've got to run because we have another guest in the studio, a rather busy one, who's about to lose her house.
Uh-oh.
So we've got another potential homeless person to join you, the catnip Kate Wells. Say hello to Linda, catnip.
Hi, Linda. How are you doing today?
Okay. Soggy, thank you for what you're working on, Kate.
Well, look,
I'm all out of here, but be careful who you're calling the pimp. Some of it might come back.
No, I've been called a pimp before, too, but nobody pays me to do what I do.
Huh.
Anyway, so I'll talk to you later, and do you come to the meeting at Denny's at 2?
I'll try.
Off meets there at 2 o'clock. Anybody's welcome.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Okay, that was some elucidating comments from Linda Lee Master, or Lighthouse Linda, as I call her. Lighthouse Linda, of course, was instrumental in occupying the Heiner House. She actually went to trial, or almost went to trial, while she was running for city council in 1992. Gee, if only she instead of Squawk Box Scott had been elected. Linda's a woman who has strange alliances sometimes. She actually endorsed Squawk Box Scott at the last city council election. She and I disagreed on that one. But in the studio with me here today, I have a distinguished guest whom you've heard before, a woman I call Catnip Kate Wells. She's a civil rights attorney who's been doing this kind of work for 2 decades. Most recently, she's been harassed with homeless work, thanks to me and others who have been throwing these people at her doorstep 5 every day, if not 10. And she's she's getting sick about the whole thing. You can hear her coughing, sniveling, and she said she's in bad shape. She'll probably give me whatever she's got. And but nonetheless, I'm going to ask her to kind of belly up to the mic here. Mm-hmm. And recently, Kate, you've been working on the case of Lisa Ann and her baby Star. And in fact, I last saw you rushing through legal papers that had just been delivered to you from, I guess, Skinner County, Sutter County, that was it, to try to save Star, 4.5, 5.5-month-old baby, a girl, for Lisa Ann. And this was, and then I heard the bad news from Becky Johnson that you had failed, at least for the moment, in this attempt. I wanted you to give me as much of a blow-by-blow description as you feel able to, perhaps a brief bit of background as well.
Well, we arrived at court that day with a full array of people that were willing to film and attend the trial. And, of course, we were not only denied the right to film, but we were denied the right to tape record, and every one of the public was denied access to push the goals that they have, which, as far as I'm concerned, is stealing babies from healthy babies from mothers in Santa Cruz County. I'll talk about that later.
They being
the Child Protective Services, an agency run amok in Santa Cruz County.
Backed up by the loyal Judge Black.
Loyal Judge Black or the loyal Commissioner Cloud, who hears probably 99% of the cases that come up to the juvenile court. Mind you, there's no way they could accomplish what they do in public, so they make it a private, a secret affair. Basically excluding people from the public in a rule that's really basically there to protect the actual person, the litigant, the person they're trying to take their baby away. It's their right to confidentiality. However, it seems to me that right should be personal to that person, and if that person wants it to be public, it should be public. As it is, they are denied the right of any public trial of any sort. They're denied a jury, they are denied the right to confront the witnesses against them. Most of the evidence against her was rumor and innuendo. So that's how the trial started off.
What's the background of the case, or shall I give the background? Would you rather I did it, or would you like to do it?
The background of the case is about a month ago, Lisa Ann and her 4.5-month-old baby were selling their crafts on the street on Pacific Garden Mall when they were approached by Santa Cruz PD, who literally snatched her baby from her arms. Her perfectly healthy baby from her arms, and took the baby into protective custody, and the baby remains to this day in foster care. There has been no incident that prompted this taking of the child. There has been no evidence of any abuse, neglect, abandonment, anything of that sort. Basically, it's a disagreement. It's a lifestyle disagreement. Basically, they took her baby because she's poor. It has been suggested to me by someone who will remain nameless, but someone who is quite thick in the system right now, who sees this happening every day, that we have a baby mill happening in Santa Cruz. And it was suggested to me that if she had been a baby born to a heroin-addicted mother, for instance, it would have been no problem to have the baby returned to her, because no one wants a heroin-addicted baby or one who has been born addicted. Lisa Ann's major fault was in having a healthy baby. It has been suggested to me by this inside person that there's money changing hands and that healthy babies are being sold, being confiscated by the government and sold to the highest bidder. getting back to the case itself, we were able to present testimony. My client did testify, and I think quite compellingly. She's a very honest woman, very straightforward, and they had, of course, made all of these bizarre accusations against her because she used marijuana 3 years ago. They keep talking about drug use, which she's not a drug user. Just rumors, basically. They printed in one of the petition reports that her boyfriend had threatened to beat up a social worker. They would not tell us when this happened, where it happened, who it happened to. We had no right to find out. You know, this was just a vague allegation that they made, and we had no right to confront the accuser. So after Lisa Ann's testimony. I gave a closing argument.
There was also a psychiatric report, was there not?
Oh, yeah. The CPS commissioned a psych eval.
CPS is the Child Protective Services.
Child Protective Services commissioned a report from Melissa Barrett.